Well, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to share with you some things that we have going on in Colorado. It's a very long title up there for you to take a look at. Really what I want to be able to do is present much more of sort of the environment and the practical side of some of the challenges that exist. We don't have any functional app that I'm going to be talking about today, but more taking you through a community care management model as a way to look at the both the need for information sharing, but the challenges that can go along with trying to make that happen. I'm Mark Wallace. I serve as the CEO of a health alliance and also as the executive director of a local health department. I don't have any relationships to disclose, but as I mentioned, I won't be talking about a particular app that's actually up and functional at this time, more around health information exchanges and shared electronic health records in more of a traditional mobile technology rather than an app-based technology. I want to thank folks who work with us here at the Alliance who made this possible, and Dr. Achity is in the back of the room, so I'm glad that he is here today. What I want to start with is just kind of focusing on what was the challenge that we're facing and why we would be looking at mobile information being available. What I want to start with is this hybrid model of care management. Many organizations are beginning to look at different models of care management, and many of the traditional models of care management are actually embedded models which use staff inside primary care organizations to provide care management. And there is some literature to show that sometimes what happens, while there is a lot of benefit that comes from practice-based care management programs, that sometimes the skill sets and the activities that care managers get involved in inside practice-based systems sometimes get confused with other roles and responsibilities that don't actually add value to care management. And by creating a hybrid model in which you actually differentiate the roles of the care managers from other clinical type staff inside a primary care practice can lead to some different results from that team. So we created back in 2011 a community-based hybrid care management model, and in that we differentiated these roles from what was going on inside the practice and what the community model was focusing on. Where inside the practice there was a lot of focus on the actual chronic diseases that the practitioners were having to treat. And on the care management side and the hybrid model, and we were really focusing on looking at chronic conditions that might not be diseases. For example, homelessness, food insecurity, lack of transportation, things like that that clearly affect outcomes but are not necessarily directly related to the chronic diseases that might be present. And we also were very cognizant of looking at the integration with behavioral health and the experience set that those care managers needed inside this care team to really look at changing the outcomes and the experience of care because of the co-present behavioral health disorders. And also this care management team had to focus a lot on resource coordination rather than making a decision about the clinical disease, since the primary care or specialty team was really going to be focused on providing those decision points. So the hybrid care management team ended up establishing long-term relationships with chronic complex patients. They really have a skill set that works on looking at care transitions and touch points that are outside the primary care practice directly. And they're focused on the reduction of preventable utilization and enhancing patient activation. So the kind of information that they're looking for doesn't necessarily fall within the traditional realm of what's collected inside electronic health records, traditional health databases, or in the way many health state health information exchanges have been conceptualized and actually implemented at this point in time. So what they basically work around, and this again is providing background here, is looking at the population in a pyramid fashion where the care management team, given the way we've described it, is really focused up at the pinnacle of the pyramid with those top 1 or 2% of the most complex, the most resource-intensive patients that often have multiple chronic medical conditions as well as behavioral health and substance use issues that make the information that's needed for the care managers and the teams to work much more complex than has been traditionally captured in our systems today. And then moving across the bottom where you see the blue box on the right going over to red boxes off on the left, it's a sort of continuum of care and the types of different organizations that need to come together to create and share the information to make this kind of hybrid care management model and the outcomes possible. So what are the barriers that exist out there? These are very traditional, and I'm sure you've all come across these when you look at sharing health-related information and trying to develop some way of bringing the different information sets together. We have lots of places where we've created silos in our industry, either because we just don't have experience working together or because we're competing with one another and we don't want to share the information because we think it would give us a competitive disadvantage to have others know what's going on. We may have lack of trust from not working together. There's obviously some regulations like HIPAA and 42 CFR Part 2 for behavioral health, basically the substance use side of that. And traditionally we've been what we refer to as being trapped in this disease-based model that keeps us from thinking more broadly about the value of the shared information. So one of the things that I wanted to focus on here is that we really looked at the kind of cross-sector business alliances that needed to come together to create the right environment to not only collect the data but find ways to share the data. And we really wanted to particularly pay attention to this issue of mental illness among patients that have complex chronic disorders. They are known to be associated with higher utilization in the healthcare system. We've known it for a long time, going back to articles, you know, that predate this one in 1999, and yet we're still struggling with trying to bring together behavioral health data and traditional medical data into information sets that can be shared easily. So when we looked at who had to participate in these cross-sector alliances, we really saw the clinically focused side, as you see on the slide there, a population-focused side bringing in public health, and then the care management side, which is really much more focused on resource and transitions than on the clinical care itself. So we created this alliance that brings together these partners about 14 years ago to become the foundation for what we would build together in order to get at population health. And really, when you look at some of the formal agreements that have to get put into place, this alliance is a formal partnership. It's a not-for-profit. Organizations belong as members. Some of them pay dues to sustain the organization and the shared activities that go on inside the alliance. But many are at the table because they represent parts of health that need to be brought to bear on solving this information sharing problem. And the alliance itself served as a predecessor to moving into this area of looking at the kind of formal agreements that often need to exist to share the information. So I don't need to spend a lot of time on this section, but obviously if you're exchanging health information, there are different roles that organizations play. One is a business associate role. That's somebody that is not functioning inside a covered entity. The covered entity is defined here on this slide and largely applies to health plans and healthcare clearinghouses and the healthcare providers who are really working with the traditional type of health data. And when you look at what covered entities can do in sharing PHI, they can share it within the privacy regulations for treatment, payment, and operations as long as every covered entity has a unique personal relationship with the patient whose information they're sharing. So that becomes a limitation when you're trying to focus on population-level health, because not every entity that might be around the table would be able to demonstrate, number one, that they have a relationship with an individual. They may be looking at the overall population health, but not at the health of individuals, and so they couldn't demonstrate that they're a covered entity, and they might not even be a covered entity because if you're dealing with transportation, if you're dealing with these other social determinants, you probably don't have a unique individual relationship with an individual that would have you be defined as a covered entity. So one of the things that, again, is a tool that can be used is an OCA, and an OCA is an organized healthcare arrangement that's recognized under HIPAA, and it allows folks who are not in a single organization and who are not able to demonstrate that they have an individual relationship with a patient from a clinical perspective to be involved in sharing information and managing a population. And so even though we had an alliance, we pulled together an OCA, which people then were able to begin to share information because of their participation in this OCA. What happens with an OCA is you want to be sure that you have a joint notice of privacy practices so that you tell folks who do have an individual relationship at one of the touch points. Let's say you come into a hospital, and I'm going to have information generated about me inside that hospital that will be shared with a broader group, some of whom may not know me individually. You notify that patient when they're signing this the consent to treat that they will have their information potentially shared with other organizations. So what this led to for us is this process of macro and micro hotspotting, where we looked at patient-centric meetings of these interdisciplinary teams that were really focused on coordinated care planning, and then macro processes that really focused more on issues and really were addressing the social determinants of health outcomes. And so you can see the data and information that people are interested in varies everything from very standard discrete information like a blood pressure or a blood sugar, but all the way over to getting information about whether this, what are resources available for homelessness and food insecurity and transportation and all of these other elements that aren't traditionally available in a single data set. So one of the things that we relied on is a shared electronic health record where we could try and capture as much of this information as possible inside a proprietary product that was selected jointly by the alliance. So clearly, it's a very important tool. Our goals are listed here on this slide. We haven't realized all of the goals all the way across the board, but they served as foundational elements for a statewide electronic information exchange for health information that today is still fairly limited in what it can accomplish and in its business model for moving forward. We had actually launched as part of the alliance back in 2004 this shared record that captured between our community providers, our community health centers, our public health department, behavioral health, mental health centers, information on our patients. Right now there's about 140,000 individuals inside this shared system. We created it as a shared system so that we could actually, regardless of where you touch the system, your information would be in there, and it would represent and reflect a comprehensive record, not something that only captured sort of bits of your history, but actually could present your entire care experience, and would then hopefully allow us over time to pull out clinical information that wasn't dependent on traditional medical billing coding. So we wanted this to serve as a foundation to get us started. One of the things that happened, unfortunately, and I think it's something that's happening around in lots of states, is that because many of us adopted these kinds of record systems, the opportunity to come in and create an information exchange, some way of bringing that information to us, whether it's mobile via an app or whether it's, you know, your traditional web portal, we had often solved many of those most vexing problems for the basic information that we needed. Good example is laboratory. Today, to have a health information exchange that says it's going to deliver you laboratory results, most of us have already found a way to get laboratory results electronically delivered to us and shared fairly easily. And so when you try and build a business model for a health information exchange based on the ability to share laboratory data, most of us don't find it economically reasonable to be charged some sort of membership or user fee in a health information exchange system to get information that's already been delivered to us electronically. What we end up having to do frequently is create mini HIEs in regions and localities that are customized to exchange an enhanced level of information that may require some modifications inside your electronic health record to capture them in a format that could be shared. For example, issues around language, issues around homelessness and food insecurity, these other pieces that allow you to manage a very complex population from a care management standpoint. So one of the things that we have used this electronic system for internally before even connecting it to a broader statewide system is to let us, between the partnerships and the trust that's been developed in the Alliance network and all of those business agreements, including the OCAs, when you put that together with our shared EHR and then look at data-driven management, what we have been able to do in some places is deploy some rapid cycle population-based interventions. For example, one of the things that we did in our part of the state was to take an adult Medicaid population. We had done community health surveys, which found significant self-reported behavioral health concerns. That rose to a priority for our communities to address inside our community health improvement plans. And then what we wanted to do was to sort of test the small model to see how we could do a rapid intervention to look at identifying mental illness early. So we mobilized what we called CAMCUME 1 and 2, and it was a large-scale telephonic-based screening for depression in an ACO population made of Medicaid beneficiaries, and allowed us to go through large numbers of individuals who were covered by Medicaid and use an evidence-based tool for screening for depression. And then because of the existence of the shared electronic system, information and handoffs could be made to track people over time, to get them connected to either a clinical environment when their scores said that there was concern about depression, depression that wasn't responding to conventional medical treatment, or a concern at the very high end of this scale about for something like suicidality, where they had to be handed off immediately with a care manager going to their home and then connecting them to behavioral health resources. What we ended up struggling with as we have moved through this whole process of using this community-based model through an alliance and lots of infrastructure created around it is we have need for data, like I'm highlighting up here on the chart, that we can't bring easily to some of the mobile devices that we had hoped we could. This is shows one of the things that we do in trying to look at preventable utilization is ED utilization for preventable conditions that could have been handled in a primary care outpatient environment. And this is a simple presentation of, you can see the hotter spots on the chart, the higher colors, are times of day and days of week when more individuals are showing up in the emergency department with preventable illness that could have been managed in a different environment. And we have looked for tools like this that could help us on an ongoing basis understand what's going on with our population and how they're utilizing care to direct the teams to better address the needs. We also look at reporting like this. We have key performance indicators, and this is one on 30-day readmissions that's really looking at how are we doing. And you can see that we're the black line on this curve, and interestingly, we were not doing well. We were going in the wrong direction. But because we were able to increasingly bring to bear shared information and then mobilize this care management team, we were able to begin to bring down ED utilization and improve it over time. And then lastly, you know, one of these very, very simple things that we wish we had more readily available, this is similar to what Brenner does, for those of you who have followed the work of Dr. Brenner. This is a utilization EKG, and unfortunately the lines on here are very small, but if you look at all of the spikes that are on the left side, those all represent utilization that probably didn't need to happen in the environment that it was happening. It was utilization of hospital admissions and ED utilization. And then there's a green line that's on about, it's the tallest line on the scale there. That green line represents when an intervention was done to assign this individual a care manager, and then looking at what went on over time, and you can see that utilization frequency went down as well as just the sheer number of encounters that this individual was having. This is somebody whose quality of life improved dramatically. The costs went down. And this kind of very visual tool that's easy for care managers to see whether or not their interventions are making a difference real time would be something that I wish we could have more easily available without a lot of background manipulation. So there's not a mobile app that we focused on. We focused a lot on the type of information exchange that occurs over existing technology that may be mobile access, but right now we're struggling with the business model in our state to get more of this information captured, because we're going to have to pay for it on a user basis. We're going to have clinicians and care managers and behavioral health individuals paying a fee. Whether that's paid obviously as an organizational-based fee or at some level, it's going to be a fee in order to create incentive to collect this information and put it together in a way that it can then be usable for those of us on the ground. So I think we've made great strides, but we've got a lot of ways to go to create the kind of business model that you see already existing in some of these lower utility mobile apps.
Thank you. All right, Mark, take the microphone. I'll ask a few questions. The audience ask a question. Very good presentation. I really enjoyed that. Any thoughts from the group here collectively? It's kind of cold in here. I know people got coats on. It's a little chilly. I thought it was just me, but that's the only thing looking at coats. Yes.
Yeah, no, actually the usefulness of the OCA agreement, where you bring groups together that don't require you to have a personal, you know, relationship with the patient, is very valuable, because we can bring people to the table to create either an interdisciplinary team that's interested in that information. You know, if you're doing nutrition, if you're doing things around some of these other parts that the traditional clinical practice isn't assessing, bringing that information, collecting it somehow, potentially, or bringing it from a macro standpoint into the picture. For example, when you're trying to look at a transportation system in a community that supports the delivery of healthcare services, it may not be that you're talking about one patient at a time. You may be talking about plotting out where individuals go around the community and then trying to bring that information about how to create a better bus system that focuses on getting people to a variety of health organization sites. Some of them may be places that are delivering nutrition services, not a direct clinical service per se. This OCA allows the individuals in the room to all share even some personal information, personally identified health information about an individual, if necessary, to solve some of the care issues that may exist. A lot of people are reluctant to go into OCAs, and I think it's mainly because a lot of attorneys just like to tell you no, and we didn't give our attorneys the opportunity to say no. We said you have to give us a yes.
You're quoting the AMA.
Yes.
And
yes.
With the American
yes.
And they're not
right. Right. The AMA is, I took that deliberately from the AMA because they're very aware of it and they actually publicize it to a limited degree, but they're not really big on promoting it. Yeah. Yes.
As soon as you started, Mark. No, this is really good. Any other questions for Mark? Mark, I have one question. Very good presentation, very interesting material. Just in terms of your vision, what are some of the things you see need to be addressed, either from a legality or a barrier to business over the next 3 years to make this a reality even more?
Well, you know, I think one of the biggest things still comes back to everybody's interpretation of HIPAA and 42 CFR in particular. We're so reluctant, even inside treatment, to share information that it's really hindering people's willingness to develop systems that could more easily exchange information. So somehow that recognition that there are legitimate ways and somebody endorsing it somehow to get our attorneys to change their opinion. You know, we find that you can do it on a case-by-case basis, but to do it on a grand population basis, we're very inhibited by our understanding and our attorney's willingness to give us some freedom to look at that information. And then secondarily, as I commented, I think one of the big challenges today is creating, we're all paying lots of fees to access information. We're paying fees to use our electronic health record. We're paying fees to get onto a health information exchange. We're paying fees to access other kinds of information. And it's getting to be very expensive to have all of these fees that are not related to a single kind of use of information. It's like, you know, being pecked at by a lot of different folks who want you to write them a check every month to get the information. And at some point, you lose an ability to prove that it's adding value, that that way of getting the information at that cost adds value on some other end to lower either the cost of care that's being delivered or to improve the outcomes or the care experience, depending on what side of the, you know, IHI triangle you want to be on for the triple aim. But that's one of the things that I think that getting that price point and what it means to then integrate the pricing to access health information is still missing.
Thank you so much for offering that up. Thank you, guys.